the answer to the question, things a zookeeper might say that an electrochemist also would say, I look at ducks all day.
Welcome to the Electrochemistry Podcast, where we talk all things electrochemistry. I'm your host, Dr. Alex Paroff, and with me is my co-host, Dr. Neil Spinner. On today's podcast, we have a very special guest, Dr. Alex Bradar. Alex is originally from Danville, Kentucky, where she went to Center College for her undergraduate and then got her PhD with Professor Byron Farnham at Auburn University, where she worked on synthesis and electrochemical characterization of ternary metal oxides. After receiving her PhD, she started her postdoc at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, where she works with Professor Jillian Dempsey. Now, Neil and I have known Alex for about 3 years now. Back in 2020, we visited Auburn to help Professor Farnham with an electrochemical impedance spectroscopy workshop, where Alex was a TA and helped out with the workshop. And when Alex came to UNC, she also helped with TAing the cyclic voltammetry boot camp in 2022 and 2023. But more important than all of those, Alex allowed us to use her lab to help us develop some new reference electrodes. All in all, we've had a great relationship with Alex, and we're very happy to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So we start the podcast off with the same question, which is, why on earth did you choose to study electrochemistry?
So just thinking about this quickly, honestly, this is going to sound so cheesy and corny, but I feel like electrochemistry kind of chose me, I guess, which is, yeah, I see you shaking your head, Neil.
No, it's just because that's what we hear. It's like this divine intervention that it like falls from the sky and picks you.
Yeah.
You didn't pick it, you know, like it's the Hunger Games and your name was picked out of the thing. You're like tribute or whatever.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. You know? I was sacrificed to the E-Chem God.
Exactly.
Well, the funny thing is, one, and I feel like I hear this so much in the academic sphere, like we don't do a good job teaching electrochemistry to undergraduates, so they don't really know what it is. And so even if you go to a really good school, and Center had an amazing chemistry program, like mm-hmm. I learned so much and I was super well prepared for graduate school. I remember my analytical professor trying to talk us through what a duck looked like and why. And, you know, he's asking us, okay, so what's the next thing it's going to do? And I was, you know, just staring at him going, what in the world is he drawing on the board? And so when it was finally a duck, I was like, I seriously don't know what that means. I have no idea why it looks like that, which is so funny in retrospect because I feel like I spend my entire day looking at ducks now.
Yeah.
But when I decided to go to grad school, I was actually planning to become a biochemist. Like, clearly, I'm not a biochemist now. I had interned at a really small company in Kentucky called Firm Solutions, where they engineer different strains of yeast to make mm-hmm. biofuels. And then naturally, because they're in Kentucky, they said, well, we've got yeast. We might as well make bourbon. So I got to be a part of that process.
They make whiskey in Kentucky?
Who'd have thought?
Weird. By the way, I just thought I'd mention, for all of those scoring out there, the answer to the question, things a zookeeper might say that an electrochemist also would say, I look at ducks all day. So there you go. Thank you. I'll be here all day. I also do bar mitzvahs.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So I when I decided to go to Auburn, I love being honest about my academic journey because I think there's so many flavors of like why people to go to grad school and why they choose the programs they go to. And then we all know about like the academic hierarchy, and I would be lying if I said it wasn't something I had been concerned about. But I had a two body problem, and my husband, now husband, he was my fiance at the time, got into vet school at Auburn. So we decided to go there, for our life choices. And there's a lot of really good research at Auburn. So I certainly didn't regret that, but there were other research groups I had been interested in going in. And then when I started, we got to our first day of orientation, and the head of the department was like, oh, by the way, we have three new professors starting this year. And then had little slides up about all of their research, and Byron's research caught my eye like very, very quickly. It was, solar energy, materials chemistry, like trying to develop new solar cells and redox flow batteries. And I was like, gosh, that's this kind of stuff that you're like, oh, could I really actually be part of something that matters? Like, could I change the world? Just maybe.
Well, the answer is no. But I'm glad you had fun.
Yeah, That's right. You know, I was the you know, 0 year pre-first year grad student, like just dreaming, like maybe this is it. Yeah. But regardless, like I think I had been enamored by my work in the biofuel company because like they really were trying to like come up with more sustainable solutions for fuel. Yeah. It was a totally different approach. But I actually learned in that job that I hate microbiology. So that was like a good thing to learn, and that I didn't really want to have to do like culturing proteins or like making cells and then purifying protein. And like, yeah, all you biochemists that might be listening to this know I said that wrong. So that's like completely fine. So I, you know, was just kind of looking around at different interesting research, and like Byron and I also just like really hit it off. I immediately thought he was going to be a good advisor, and he was like, yeah, you're going to be an electrochemist. And I said, let's go.
So how many other professors did you interview at Auburn? Because I had the same experience. I found someone that I was compatible with.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, how many professors at Auburn did you end up interviewing or seeing? Because there's the two aspects of grad school. It's what you're doing and then who you're working with, right? So how many of those professors might have had cool research, but you were like, this guy's a troll, I don't want to work with him, right? You know, nobody's a troll at Auburn. I'm just saying.
No, and I'm saying this genuinely, like, I, like, of the research that I was interested in, there wasn't an advisor I felt like was going to be a bad fit. It was, you know, one of those years, like, you go into departments and, like, depending on the cycle, like, did they just take 4 students? Like, do they have grant money? Like, certain professors might or might not be taking students. And so there were other professors I was certainly interested in, and, like, maybe they weren't taking a student that year. The only other one I, like, was really seriously talking to was actually also an electrochemist. His name's Dr. Easley, Dr. Chris Easley. He does more like electroanalytical research, microfluidics, all things like that. Also vibed with him. I thought he was really great. And it was funny, I went to a poster session that he was giving. Like Auburn did this like professor poster session thing like at the Auburn University Hotel, and I went to go talk to him some more. And I was like, also, I feel like I should just be really honest with you. I'm also interested in Byron's research, and like I am considering joining his group. And Chris was just like, oh my God, you should join his group. And I was like, not expecting that aggressive of a response, like, because I was like, oh, did you not actually want me to work for you? And he was just like, no, he's a really good guy. And I have found that, like, faculty that are a little more established in departments really try to support newer faculty. And they're like, if they need students, like, we're going to give them first pick of the students kind of thing. And that was sort of what I felt happened in that situation. And I, more than anything, I felt like permission to just, like, forget Easley's group. And he was like, yeah, just go work for Byron, it's fine. And so I just randomly stopped going to his group meeting. And then a month later, I saw him in the hallway, and he was like, where have you been? And I was like, you literally told me to go work for Byron. And he was like, yeah, I regret that a little bit now. And I was like, well, it's too late, so it's fine. But no, it was a super funny story. And he was on my committee, and he was also a really good, like, talking point for, like, helping me deal with some experiments. I, of course, had weird eChem data, as everyone does in grad school. And
there's
so,
no not weird eChem data.
Literally,
all
no.
eChem data is weird.
No, and, like, I did some, like, fairly non-traditional electrochemistry. And so, like, in terms of people to troubleshoot with, like, Chris Easley was awesome because he was just, like, he is an electrochemist, and he would, like, was so willing to like just help me troubleshoot things, like even Byron. But like that was also a really great thing about Auburn. It's a smaller department. For those of you listening to this that are considering grad school, I like department culture is super important as well. And like you just need to find a place where you're like comfortable and like fit well, because I am always someone that like I want to go talk to people. Like I'm a social scientist. Like I need like people to bounce ideas off of. And like the faculty at Auburn, it was like a very open door policy. Like I was knocking on their doors like every other day, just like finding someone random and be like, I'm having this weird problem, do you know anything about this? And I like never got turned away, and that was like really important for my development as a chemist. So like I super appreciate them for that. So it's like one of those things where it's like if you asked for help, it was there, like you know. So I appreciate that.
So you have more of like an education edge. It sounds like you want to go more into like teaching and education and things of that nature. So do you feel that there is this gap in electrochemistry education, and that's something that you like want to pursue in the future?
Yes. Yes. So I am like trying to go on the faculty job market this year, which is like terrifying to say out loud, but, holistically, I'm just like purely like education is important, period. Yeah. As far as electrochemistry goes, like, obviously I got everything I needed out of grad school for it, but it was something where I was just totally learning in grad school. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't have much of a basis, like, again, other than the professor drawing the duck on the board, and I was like, what are you doing? And I'm, this is so, like, something I'm literally trying to actively think about, like, while I'm writing these applications, but especially just given, like, new technologies, like, and to get students excited about real-world applications of the things they're learning, because it is so hard for them to, like, learn a concept in general chemistry and just be like, well, why should I care about this? Like, what is the practical application of this? Which is the first question people want to answer. That's the question the parents ask at the thesis defense, because they don't understand anything else that you're doing. But I do think for, like, solidification of ideas and, like, why should I – like, you can get excited about the fundamental theory later on when you actually understand what it's what it's good for. And, like, naturally curious people maybe don't care about that as much, but, like, you know, it's okay that not every college student has the background to just be naturally curious. Like, there's other things, like, you know, going on there that make that difficult. So I think, you know, like, battery chemistry, like, getting them to understand that that's, like, your phone works because of all these ideas and concepts and research that, you know, won Nobel Prizes, like, is super important to, like, things that we think about. You know, semiconductor industry, like, it's also a big component of, like, why we can, like, use technology the way we do. And all of those things are just, like, important electrochemical ideas, whether it's, like, how electrons are moving through materials or, like, what do circuits look like. And on some level, it's really hard to even translate, you know, the stereotypical solution experiment we put together as, like, electrochemists to, like, well, how does this work in a battery? Like, sometimes I don't even have a good answer to that. Guys, I'm not a battery chemist. I haven't done a lot of that work.
Well, the funny thing about that is that when you say that you had – someone drawing ducks on the board when you were an undergrad, like, that's all I had in either high school or as an undergrad, was, like, put a copper stick in this cup and a zinc stick in this cup, and then put a paper towel between the two solo cups, right? But, like, that's the I mean, that's honestly the extent. And I feel similarly in the way that you do, as far as holistically, if you will, that education is, like, paramount, right? And that specifically to our, you know, field of electrochemistry, that I guess I'll say there's two things. The first is that it's cool if there are other ways to make it real to undergraduates or even high school students, other than just, like, putting two sticks of metal, which is cool because in some sense it's like, well, one's blue and one's, you know, different colors. Like, I know this is oversimplified, and I actually don't mean this as a snarky joke, which is, like, the first time in my life, but, like, when you want, part of the reason why I really got interested in chemistry in the begin with is because it's cool. There's different colors, things are foaming and exploding, and it's exciting. So, like, there's actually a bit to me of, you don't always have to care to as large of a degree, I would say, with chemistry as with other things like mathematics or whatever, about how does this impact the real world, because it's like, well, it's exploding. I don't care
how. It just looks cool. Yeah, exactly. Right? That's
something
so
is
true.
Foaming up, or it's pink, or it's orange, or something. Well, I don't really care if it's what a real person would use this for. Yeah. It looks cool.
Yeah.
But with electrochemistry in particular, the points that you made about technology, I think, are understated. Quite literally every person almost on this planet is walking around with this supercomputer in their pocket.
Right.
That is entirely possible only because of electrochemistry, right? Yeah. Every bit of the power coming to your phone is from a lithium-ion battery.
Yep.
Almost all batteries use lithium-ion, and all phones, and almost all of the weight is the battery, right? Yep. So, like, there is such an easy answer for electrochemistry uniquely compared to almost, I shouldn't say that because I don't know about every science, but compared to a lot of scientific fields that are like, what is this used for? Well, actually, every one of you is using electrochemistry right now.
Yeah, and it's so true, and it's like, I think, and I'm like later in my career, like, someone's mad that I just said that at 29, but...
A 30-year-old said she's later? I resent that.
Well, I guess I mean, like, educationally, and, like, maybe this is sort of where I was referring to, like, the naturally curious people, like, I just... I don't know if it was, like, even natural curiosity so much as just, like, I wanted to be a good student. Like, I was just really locked into, like, I wanted to be, like, get good test grades. And, like, honestly, being locked in that mindset was actually not good as, like, being a creative researcher. Like, I was not very creative. That was something I had to learn. So if you're out there and you're like, oh, I'm not creative enough to do that, you can learn it. Like, it's not impossible. You just have to be open. And so, like, creativity is something I have, like, totally adopted to, and like put that in my own like workflow. I personally did a bad job like making those connections for like why I should care about something, because in the classroom I cared about it because I wanted to perform.
Right.
And now I
and that's harder for kids that aren't built like us, let's say, where school was always important to me as well. And I enjoyed the pursuit of good grades.
Yes.
There's a personal fulfillment to that.
Yeah.
Not every kid is built that way.
No.
And that doesn't mean they're stupid.
Right. It means we need to reach them another way.
Exactly.
Them through actual real life like examples. And so like
or hands on stuff.
Exactly.
Or even if there's still a classroom element where they ought to strive for a good score because they have to pass, whatever. Like that maybe that doesn't totally go away. If you can entice them with a reason that's beyond the grade will make you feel good about yourself.
Exactly.
Because that works for maybe nerds like you and me. But not everybody's built that way, right?
Exactly. And I am like so much more appreciative of that like in my current like life stage, I guess. Like as I'm trying to think about this and like I'm not even that same student anymore. Like, there's a point where in grad school is not about the grades. It's about the pursuit of something interesting. It's about the pursuit of knowledge that's, like, not rewarded in the same way. Like, you're not doing it for an A. You're doing it to, like, learn something for yourself and to, like, do something you're proud of. The other thing about grad school is you have to fail. Like, you have to get really good at failing in the right way and just being okay with it. And, like, that is also not something you learn very well in the classroom. I will say, I think Center helped me with that a little bit because Center was just a really hard school. Yeah. So, like, yes, I came out of high school as, like, an excellent student, like, never really did badly in a class. Although, the other thing I love telling people is the only AP class, or the AP exams, I guess, like, I didn't fail the class, but the only AP exam that I failed was the AP chemistry exam.
Irony,
literally so funny, yeah. But, and it's because, like, and, you know, I really thought, like, oh, I'm done. I'm never doing chemistry. That's way too hard, but I loved it. So it's like, no, I'm going to do the thing that's interesting, even if it's hard. And I even remember like when I was debating between, am I going to be a chemistry major or just go straight into biochemistry? And I decided to lean more into chemistry. And that felt scary because I didn't think I was very good at physics. And like physics was the only C I got in undergrad. And so like the things that I have sort of pushed to were like maybe the things I just were, I'm not naturally good at. But like,
don't you appreciate it more though?
I do. And like the failure was like important to me. Like it taught me to get out of my own head and just to look for something cool. And I think I'm a better like researcher and scientist for that. Like not doing the low hanging gratification, I guess.
Now it's interesting because like metal oxides are also used in batteries, but you studied metal oxides. These are different types of metal oxides in graduate school. Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit about those metal oxides? They're different than the battery metal oxides.
Right. Yeah. So all metal oxides are different, I would say. Like each is their own flavor.
Like snowflakes.
Not a single one is made exactly the same. Although some person that's really good at crystallography is arguing with me. It's like, no, there's multiple with rock salt structures, so calm down. No, I actually like started my thesis defense this way. I just showed a picture of the periodic table and was like, if you take 75% of these elements, they all have an oxide. And a lot of them are super stable. I mean, we have an abundant amount of oxygen around us. So it's just sort of, they're, you know, ubiquitous in nature, which makes them really interesting to study because you can do a lot of different things with them. They have a lot of different applications. The way that we were approaching looking at them was for dye-sensitized solar cells. So for those familiar with that community, they're, you know, if you take a traditional solar cell, you have silicon as your main component, and it is like your total workhorse. It's your light absorber, it's your charge separator, it's your rectifier. So it's doing everything that the solar cell is supposed to do. But a dye-sensitized solar cell is maybe in this like fourth generation of solar cell. Could be in the same family as like a perovskite, you know, but it's these more like modular heterojunction solar cells where you've got different components that are each doing a different part of the puzzle.
I'm curious about this just to cut you off because I know fundamentally how a solar cell works. The PN junction, there's a depletion zone, and the light jams the electron out of that, right? And it flows. That's where the electricity comes from. So actually, where's the dot? Is it a PN junction or is it different entirely?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. So it's not a true PN junction. You actually could think of it as like, it's sort of like a three cell electrochemical cell where you like, you know,
it's not liquid, right?
Most of them are actually liquid, but you don't actually have like a true anodic and cathodic reaction. Like where it's like a PN junction solar cell, you're kind of doing both things at the same time. Right. That's how you're splitting the charge. Not, you're creating you're creating a local concentration gradient that's different across space.
Right, exactly.
And that's how you get the charge to move. It's actually, you're working on more like kinetic dynamics in a dye-sensitized solar cell to get charge to move. So you have this super high surface area material, which we normally use metal oxides. The workhorse metal oxide in that field is TiO2. So, and TiO2, I haven't found a thing it's bad at yet. If someone knows of something, let me know.
Sunscreen.
But like,
sunscreen.
It's good at sunscreen. That's good at everything. It's truly good at everything. I'm like researching it for like another application currently. So like, it's not bad at anything. Yeah. I don't understand, but anyway. So yeah, universally good metal oxide TiO2. So you make it high surface area, so you use nanoparticles, you make films of it, and then you can load small molecules onto those electrodes that are dye molecules, so they have high extinction coefficients. You know, the most famous one, since, you know, shout out to UNC, we love Rutris Bippi down there. So it's like a very famous sort of dye molecule, so you can like put linkers on it to actually can like, so it will adsorb chemically to the metal oxide surface, not just physically, not just like fizzy.
So what's the reaction with light photons? Like,
yep. So it's actually the molecule that's doing the light absorption.
The
so
dye.
The dye molecule is doing the light absorption, not the material. So this is where we come from. Like, it's heterojunction. We're separating each component. It's modular. So you've got your light absorber molecule that gets photo excited, and then based on the metal oxide that you have present, this is different for all metal oxides, but you can have metal oxides that are acting metallic, which means that they have like a high concentration of states across like their whole sort of band diagram, I guess. Or you can have something that's like semiconductive or insulating, depending on how big that gap is, where the location of those states are. And just because something is semiconductive or insulating doesn't necessarily mean it's bad at passing charge, like fundamentally. It actually just depends on where the absolute energetics of those states are in space. So like TiO2 has this good conduction band position, like, so that way a lot of the dye molecules that people can put on it, where the excited state of that dye molecule lies, is higher than the conduction band edge of the TiO2, so you get charge injection inside of that. And so that's actually where the charge gets separated. And then literally, the literature is filled, like, there's been decades of research on, well, what are the, you know, recombination pathways that could happen? What kills your charge? Like, why aren't they super efficient? How do we make them more efficient? And a lot of that has to do with pathways of, like, oh, well, the electron in the TiO2, instead of going to the external circuit, it recombined with another dye molecule. Like, it de-excited a dye. Or it combined with the electrolyte in solution. So usually we use, like, iodide triiodide as a redox mediator in that field. And so depending on, maybe it, like, recombined with that dye. So people have done a lot of research to be like, well, how do we get rid of these recombination pathways? How do we make them more efficient? So that whole DSSC solar cell I just described is an N-type DSSC. So it's only one side. So to answer your original question that took me 5 minutes, I'm sorry. it is actually only an N-type DSSC.
And tune in next week for P-type.
You didn't know I was going to be this long-winded. Actually,
well, I mean, I did want to know, actually. Yeah, I mean, we do. In all seriousness, this is one of these things that's like...
We get a lot of questions.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we know to a large degree of specificity the stuff that we studied in graduate school or as a postdocs or whatever. And then because of our jobs, Alex and I have had to learn a little bit about a lot of things.
Exactly.
Because we help customers with it. But, you know, we're honest with people. For example, if someone has a system and they're whatever, like, a lot of times we're like, well, I don't really know the specific electrochemistry of your system, but I know enough about electrochemistry or enough ancillary things to try to help. But, like, dye-sensitized solar cells are just one of those things that I have not had any experience
with. Right.
I had a friend in graduate school who was doing them, but we talked about other things. Never.
You're like, the thing we're not talking about right now is research in grad school.
We went out for drinks, and I was not interested in talking about science, you know? So I actually never asked him about his work.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
I missed opportunity.
Yeah. So as far as, like, that's just an N-type DSSC, and that has to do with the fact that TiO2 itself is an N-type semiconductor, like,
extra electrons
to do with where its Fermi level lies naturally. So, like, you all heard about, like, N-type, P-type, and intrinsic semiconductors. So, like, silicon by itself, like, pure perfect silicon is an intrinsic semiconductor, but it's actually, like, not, we don't want to use it as an intrinsic semiconductor. Like, chemically, that's its most useless form, I would argue.
Okay.
And I don't know the Phil well enough to probably make that whole statement, but, like, from what I understand, like, you actually want to have it doped at certain levels because that gives you larger thermodynamic thresholds to do things. And then it also means that when you put the P-type and the N-type together, your concentration regime of charges is larger, so you get better charge separation. Like, that's the whole sort of physical requirement behind that thing. Behind that whole field. Yeah, so TiO2 is just naturally N-type. You don't have to dope it to make it that way. It just is. And in fact, most metal oxides that are semiconductive are intrinsically N-type, which I shouldn't combine those two things, but naturally N-type, I would say. And it has to do with the fact that you're moving electrons through the metal orbitals. So if you look at like the construction of the valence band and the conduction band and what orbitals are making those bands or, you know, responsible for their construction, the oxygen orbitals are almost entirely your valence band. So those are the filled states.
Yeah.
And then your empty states, because think about like anion, cation, so all your electrons are focused on the oxygen orbitals, so that's your valence band. Your conduction band are your empty metal orbitals, right?
Okay.
So, and typically for transition metals, those are going to be the D and the S orbitals. That is one big reason why most of these metal oxides are naturally N-type, is because you're going to have electrons as your majority charge carrier, and those are the orbitals that are responsible for moving the charge the majority of the time. But then, you know, chemistry does interesting things. Then if you go along the periodic table and you get to later transition metals, the energetics of those orbitals actually change. And so for nickel oxide and copper oxide, for example, the D orbitals are actually lower in energy such that they start to overlap with the oxygen 2p orbitals. And what happens there is it actually converts those metal oxides from being N-type to P-type, because now we're moving our charge through the valence band, and we're actually doing, we're moving a hole as our majority charge carrier instead of an electron. And that's just like, again, another naturally occurring property of those metal oxides because of their chemical properties.
I worked with nickel oxide in my PhD.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I use it as an electrocatalyst for a variety of things.
Yeah.
And I'm aware that it's a semiconductor, but I never really did semiconductor studies per se, right? It was more like a side note in any publication or presentation that like nickel oxide works for this thing and it's a semiconductor, blah, blah, blah. But so the N and P type thing was never something I really like.
It only matters for certain applications, right? Like if you're using it as an electrocatalyst, like you don't really care what its majority charge carrier is.
You just care
that it passes charge.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So, but for solar cell kind of things, when you're actually thinking about the construction and like what direction you need charge to flow.
That's where it really does
it
matter.
It really starts to matter. And so, and that's where like, and then to go back to like, why do we need both N and P type? Well, that's how silicon solar cells work better, because you get, again, a higher thermodynamic threshold for charge separation. Mm-hmm. If you only have the N-type side in the open circuit voltages, the way we think about this, the maximum voltage you can get out of that system is the redox potential of the redox mediator that you have in the disensitized solar cell to the Fermi level of the metal oxide in your system. And so you can imagine, if those are my two potentials that I'm sort of working between, I can move the redox mediator potential some just by like playing with different molecules. Like to get higher VOCs, people usually switch to like cobalt trisbipy instead of using iodide triiodide, for example. Mm-hmm. But your Fermi level of your metal oxide is fixed unless you change metal oxides, but then you might change how the whole system works. Yeah. So you've got like a limited number of things to play with there. And so the dream for the DSSC field is to make a tandem disensitized solar cell, which would work more like a PN silicon solar cell, where you'd have an N-type side, a P-type side, and your total voltage you can get from the system is from the Fermi level of the N-type metal oxide and the Fermi level of the P-type metal oxide. Yeah, exactly.
So you get more power out of it.
Exactly. So it's a better solar cell. The problem is, P-type metal oxides are just like worse at their jobs than N-type metal oxides. So they don't move holes as well as N-type metal oxides move electrons. And so my research was really focused on, is there a way we can like look at some P-type metal oxides and like understand their charge transport properties better, was what it really boiled down to. And the ternary metal oxide aspect of this really came about that. So nickel oxide, really well studied in the literature on the DSSC side. Like, it is the stereotypical metal oxide for the P-type side. But if you've ever seen nickel oxide, it's black in color, which means if you're trying to use it as a transparent layer to put a dye molecule on, it's not doing great.
Yeah.
So, and there's obviously ways to help it, like, you know, become more transparent. You can do some defect remediation and things, and a lot of people do work on that. But our, like, you know, what Byron proposed to start his independent career was, well, you know, there's these metal oxides out there called Delaphosite metal oxides that are understudied, and they're naturally P-type. So can we use those instead to make a better P-type device?
Cool. Very cool. Well, Alex, thanks for being part of this podcast and this interview. And now a short break and a chance to listen to some of our sponsors. I'm Dr. Rick, and I help graduate students from becoming their advisors.
You know, Dan, I bet if you get a piece of paper, you can write out like the whole mechanism for this reaction.
You know, that's just the janitor. He doesn't actually know chemistry or work for you.
Ah, right. Yeah, well, I mean, I just thought while he was here, he might as well start doing some CVs, you know?
Some of these graduate students are showing pretty dramatic transformations after only even a single year in the research group. So can anybody tell me what's wrong with this email?
Oh, he didn't write kind regards before his email signature. Oh no, he didn't copy the entire group onto the email. How are they supposed to know what Leroy's next 3 weeks are gonna look like?
No, this email is just 4 words, two of which are your name.
Oh, right.
Yes, this student typed 3 paragraphs. It probably needs more than 4 words of reply. Some of these graduate students even start to develop the same level of advisor intensity, but often they have real trouble regulating their aggression.
Why don't you have more data to show me? Are you even in the lab all weekend? This is not the damn post office!
Actually, Steve, this is literally the post office. Remember, you're just here mailing your mom a birthday card. Nobody here needs to be yelled at. It's a process, but we have to have hope.
Hey, do you think this industry job is going to accept me? I only have an H index of 12.
Remember, there are careers outside of academia, and out there, nobody cares about your publications.
Pine Research, talking to graduate students about their careers outside of academia since 2007.
Advertisement is a joke for comedy purposes and is not real, nor does it constitute an offer of any kind from Pine Research. Restrictions apply. See terms and conditions for details. Not valid in Alaska, Hawaii, any of the contiguous 48 states, or any country on any of the 7 earthly continents, except Antarctica. Contact Pine Research for details, real offers, life advice, or product quotes.
All right, everybody, we are going to play a very exciting game of eChem Abstract Mad Libs. So maybe you played Mad Libs when you were younger, maybe you didn't. I did, but I don't know, I'm weird, maybe you didn't. So in case you haven't, here's how Mad Libs work. So a Mad Lib is basically a story where there's keywords removed and there's blanks taking the place of those words. And those blanks need to be filled in. And they're usually things like nouns or verbs, adjectives, numbers, any sort of category of thing or part of speech to fill in those blanks. And now the goal of this Mad Lib is to have somebody who is unfamiliar with the story fill in those blanks for you, but that person doesn't know what the story is, and so usually and hopefully this results in something somewhat nonsensical or hilarious. So today we're playing a slight version of that called eChem Abstract Mad Libs. And so what I have here is a fake electrochemistry abstract that I will be asking my esteemed colleague Alex Peroff, as well as our guest Alex Bradar, for a series of things like nouns, verbs, and adjectives, but also chemicals, numbers, instruments, right? Chemistry, science-y things. There's a mix of them here, okay? Neither Alex has heard this story here, don't know what they're filling in, or what the context, you know, of these blanks are. And so once they're filled in, I'm going to read the abstract, and hopefully it's absolutely ridiculous. So are both of you ready?
Yes.
Yes.
All right, good. Be more ready.
So as Alex Bradar is our guest, I will be asking her most of these, and then but you two can collude and come up with answers.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. So without further ado, here we go. So the first thing that comes to your mind, I need an element.
Bismuth.
Bismuth. I will be typing these in. Bismuth. All right. Another element.
Copper.
Copper. A prefix. So, you know, like a scientific prefix, right?
So not like milli, like, or
yeah. Giga. That's going to be terrible.
Giga. Giga. First one that you said
we're
it.
Doing
giga.
It. Yeah.
It probably is terrible. So yeah. We're good. All right. An adjective.
Pristine.
Ooh.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a good. I haven't heard that one before.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Another prefix.
Milli.
Milli.
Classic.
Two L's. Got it.
Classic prefix.
Yeah, classic.
When Neil and I just play this game, it's like I'm doing like the same thing, like toaster.
Yeah.
In the next game, toaster.
Yeah. That is the problem with it, the same two people doing it, right?
Game,
yeah. We hear the same words. I'm like, oh, it's another toaster application.
You gotta get some new blood in here.
Yeah. So I don't have that trick in this one, so I won't be asking you for a household device that's used for the fabrication.
Oh, okay, cool.
That's the trick. Right now, I'm giving away my secrets, but okay.
Oh, no.
Another adjective.
Cold?
That's an adjective. Yes. A three-digit number.
109.
An integer.
6.
A characterization technique. So, like a scientific character. You know what I mean?
XPS. Yeah. X-ray photoelectron spectroscopy.
XPS. Yeah. Two numbers. So,
two separate numbers.
And I tell my colleague Alex this before. Yeah. You are a scientist. That doesn't mean it's 5. It can be 10 to the minus 4 billion.
Right.
So I'm just clarifying.
Log 9.
The more ridiculous the number, generally the funnier and stupider this abstract will be.
They can be negative.
They can be negative. That's right. I just want to clarify with that because otherwise I'll get like 1, 4, and that's boring.
Okay.
So anyway.
Can it be imaginary numbers?
Is that a number?
Square root of negative 1.
Square root of negative 1. Otherwise known as I. All right, number.
let's see. 10 to the minus 9. Or 5 times 10 to the minus 9.
Five times 10 to the minus 9. Got it. All right, a gas.
Xenon.
You know
that's I will say like whenever we do this, all the noble like gases are just like free reign, like helium, neon,
because it always ends up being like we reacted it with xenon, which no one has ever said.
No one has ever done.
Exactly.
I'm only thinking that because Frank was talking about xenon at lunch.
Yeah. Because it's the weird, you know, element no one uses or whatever.
Well, and we don't do things with gas. I mean, the most common gas I use is N2
I'm saying like, and xenon is like
it's
lasers, right?
Yeah.
No one's ever used xenon outside of the context of a xenon laser.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
No one's ever been like, well, I just had a tank of xenon in my lab.
I think it's using like arc lamps and stuff for like.
Yeah, right.
For
like detectors for like XRDs and things. Like.
That sounds right.
That was deep. That came from deep somewhere in me. I don't know.
I have no idea. Okay, a beverage.
Sangria.
Ooh.
Was I allowed to say something alcoholic?
Yes, of course you are. We're all over 21, I think.
We are.
An electrochemistry technique.
If you're doing electrochemistry and you're under 21, wow.
Yeah.
I'm out of it.
And if you're doing electrochemistry and you're over 21 and you're not drunk.
Yeah, then what are you doing?
What are you doing?
An electrochemistry technique. Let's do linear sweep voltammetry.
I'll say
LSV.
A measured quantity. And I think what I mean by that is
current voltage,
right? Like so, not unit, right?
Not the unit
or volts, but it doesn't have to be electrochemistry. Just a unit,
measurable quantity.
Exactly. Okay.
Let's do grams.
Mass.
Mass.
Yeah, sorry. I know this is hard. Yeah.
Yeah, we couldn't think of what the word
I
was.
I couldn't think of what to call this. When I was coming up with this, and I was like, "All right, I'm going to replace this part of the abstract with a thing." I was, you know, it's like. So
it's
going to be a sentence that's something like we measured the current of our whatever.
Okay.
Right. And so it'd be funnier if you said we measured the capacitance or the intensity. Mass is fine. We could do mass if we don't want to think.
We measure the absorbance.
Absorbance. Okay.
We should go there. Okay.
Yeah. And I actually don't know if that's.
Sorry,
what the sentence
I needed
is.
So much context.
No, this is actually the thing. We couldn't think of what to call. I know it's like the dumbest thing. I was like, what is that called? It's not the unit, but it is kind of unit.
It is kind of the unit, but
the variable, I guess.
Right. That was the other way I thought of variable.
But would you call it like the variable? Like,
but if I say variable, you'll say X.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's true.
I can't like out of. Like in context, if I'm doing I'm getting way off topic here, but if I'm doing a presentation or something and I'm saying like, well, we have voltage and we have current, which unit would you want to use? You'll know what I mean. You mean current or voltage.
Right.
And if I'm saying amps or volts, which unit? It's the same word, but you mean the same thing.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like there isn't an English word to describe
quantity
or variable, right? Like what exactly that class of things is.
Well, we used Mad Libs and created a language conundrum.
We did.
So
yeah, that's right.
Let us know if you know what we're talking
about.
Yeah,
we're making more questions for ourselves.
Yeah.
So that's over with. Thank you. And that's the only one.
Okay, good.
I didn't want to do that to myself again. Okay. An adverb.
Slowly.
Slowly. A number.
Let's do E. is a number.
E is a number. 2.7828. Got it. A unit.
Volts.
Well, I'll just put B. Volts. An element.
Another element. Let's do a fun one like, let's do like uranium.
Uranium.
Actually, can I change that to thorium? No, you have to take my first guess.
I don't have to do anything.
Oh, thorium. Let's do thorium.
Thorium.
Let's do the fun action.
That's right, thorium. All
you're
right.
Not my dad. You can't
tell me. You're not my real dad. I'll do what I want.
Do what I want. The thorium.
I
want
to go off and play Ekem Mad Libs, daddy.
Can't stop me.
This has taken a very weird turn. Yeah.
So my God. Inside jokes. I love this so much.
Okay, an integer.
An integer. Let's do 27.
27. Another element.
Aluminum.
Aluminium. No, aluminum. Integer.
100. Let's go flat 100.
I was waiting.
Flat, okay. Flat 100.
Flat 100.
Flat 100.
Benjamins.
A Benjamin. Yeah, now we're taking a different
turn. Yeah, that's
yeah,
a different
turn.
An animal.
Ooh, let's do otters.
Otter. I said singular animal.
Well, an otter.
An otter.
Okay, a letter.
A letter A.
A. An adjective.
Why are the adjectives so hard? I keep wanting to say like pretty, but like
pretty's an
it's gonna be
good.
Pretty.
Pretty.
We're gonna go with pretty.
Got it.
This is about to be silly.
All right, now an element or a compound.
An element or a compound. Okay. In
don't
shout
say
out.
Bippy. I don't know how to spell any of this.
Oh my! I was literally about to say like in shout out to UNC. We'll go with Rubippy.
Okay, I'm literally gonna spell it R U B I P P Y.
That's right. Well, not the two P's, but like
too late.
That's close enough.
Too bad.
That's fine.
I spelled Rubippy.
That was the phonetic spelling of Rubippy.
I don't use these weirdo. Crazy
weirdo molecules.
Molecules that
someone
you clearly
UNC
made up on your way here.
About to claim, oh gosh, someone from UNC is about to claim, like you know, fight you online.
You
probably.
Made this up. It's not a real thing. Anyway, moving on. A food item.
Ooh, how about a quesadilla?
Ooh, I like it. Mm. Quesadilla. Okay. Another electrochemical technique.
I gotta do impedance. Let's just
right,
throw it in there.
Yeah, we gotta have EIS.
I know. I was gonna be like, I'm not gonna be lame. I'm not gonna do
okay.
What I know.
An adjective.
Why are these hard?
Yeah,
you could do something like
slimy. Tap Alexson.
Yeah,
Alex. Yeah,
slimy.
Slimy.
I like slimy. Let's
good.
Go with
slimy's
that.
Slimy's good. Okay. Another number. We're almost done. I promise.
Okay. 13.
13.
Shout out to Taylor Swift.
T sizzle. All right. A party item.
Ooh, a pinata.
Pinata. Another element or compound?
Let's do ferrocene. It's the electrochemist's favorite.
That's right, it is. Yeah. A fun activity.
Rock climbing.
So not. It's so not.
People listening to this that like know me are going to be rolling their eyes so hard.
Rock
over.
Climbing is terrible, for the record.
No, it's fun.
It's just terrible.
If you didn't know, Neil doesn't like rock climbing.
All right, another. There's only four left.
Okay.
I promise here. Animal.
Animal. Yeah. Now I don't think it's alligator. Gosh, alligator.
Alligator. Oh, see, yeah.
You could have used crab.
That would have been better.
Crab.
I'm crab. Yes. Crab. Okay.
Everyone loves crab. A property.
A property?
Yeah, so I think I mean like
I'm just thinking Monopoly right now.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure
like
I think like
conductivity.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Man, I am going to be the dumbest guest you all have ever
No.
Wait, if you're dumb, how dumb is it that I can't remember what I'm asking for? That's even worse.
Okay, an intrinsic property.
Yeah, right. A material property.
Yeah, a material property.
Let's do hardness.
Okay. All right, two more.
Okay.
Your favorite adjective.
I'm so bad at this. Now I'm just thinking greasy because it's like
greasy.
Oh, another
greasy.
Phrase.
Yeah, that's good.
It's greasy.
Slimy and greasy.
Grease, slimy and greasy.
All right. And the last one, I need a vehicle or like a transportation device of some kind.
A plane. Airplane.
Airplane. All
my
right.
Favorite.
So now let me press my magic button and get the story here. Now, I lied to you. I didn't write this. This is so sometimes I take like a reference and I try to base my abstract on that reference. So this is a paper, I'm not sure if you've heard of it. It's called Evidence and Influence of Cognitive
Vacancies.
Evidence and Influence of Copper Vacancies in P-type copper gallium oxide mesopores films by an Alexandria Bradar. and Byron Farnham from 2019.
I wrote this abstract, so this is going to be like really funny.
That's right. Yes. I have stolen your paper. This was Alex's idea. Yeah. He was like, you should pick one of Alex's papers and do
I
her.
Love this.
And I was like, that's an amazing idea.
Were we joking about that at CB boot camp? Like, I feel like I'm having deja vu about this. Okay. Like,
about
taking abstracts or something, or like.
You know, a lot of stuff happened at CV Bootcamp.
You know, I can't remember. Yeah,
what happens at CV
Bootcamp
stays at CV Bootcamp.
Yeah. All right, yeah. I can't wait to hear this.
Okay.
The
truth is that most abstracts I've done for this, I've written myself. I get some ideas here and there, and sometimes I've referenced some papers.
No, but this is good for
this. This is actually your abstract, and I just plugged some crap in.
I'm so excited right now. Yeah.
And away we go. Delaphosite bismuth copper oxide gigacrystals. Were hydrothermally synthesized and characterized spectroscopically and electrochemically as pristine thin film. See, that kind of makes sense.
That actually works.
Gigacrystal? Like, gigacrystal. That's my like research goal for the rest of my life is to make a gigacrystal.
Okay, moving on. God. The millicrystals demonstrate a cold orientation within the film structure, as shown by the enhancement of the 109 peaks via six-dimensional powder XPS. Six-dimensional.
The 109's like almost real.
Also,
actually,
I think
like,
that this is a tribute to the fact that it's your abstract. I think in your paper it's actually XPS there, and you just put it with XPS.
No, I think it was XRD there.
No, I'm reading it right. Oh no, it is XRD. Oh, it's your paper. You're right.
Wouldn't that be so embarrassing if I didn't know?
Yeah, you went
paper,
from XPS to XRD.
But I did do XPS in this paper, so that is kind of funny. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I did impedance too. So.
Annealing conditions of low and high temperature. For example, the square root of -1 until 5 × 10⁻⁹ degrees Celsius.
Oh, we went cold.
From I to 10⁻⁹. Yeah. With xenon and or sangria atmospheres were investigated. And the resulting effect on the thin film electrochemistry was measured. LSV showed an increase in non-Faradaic absorbance with higher annealing temperatures and demonstrated a slowly reversible redox feature, which had an E1/2 of E volts versus ferrocene. This feature is assigned to a thorium 27+ aluminum 100+ redox coupling associated with surface otters.
The best kind of otters.
The best
kind
of otters. It's the best place for otters to be.
Yeah, truly, on the surface, yeah.
A-ray photoelectron and energy pretty spectroscopies. Energy pretty spectacular.
Energy pretty.
EPS.
It's so pretty.
Provide evidence for Roux-Bippy surface defects and quesadilla vacancies.
Okay, that's the best one. Oh my gosh, quesadilla.
EIS revealed that the electrocatalyst films were highly slimy with a sigma of around 13 Siemens per centimeter. See, that's like a number that would be 13.
Yeah.
Way to go.
Yeah, sorry. Thanks, Taylor Swift.
Yeah. See, it's your paper. Like, it has to almost make sense.
Yeah.
Consistent with large density of pinatas induced by ferrocene vacancies.
Yes. Yes, right. That's exactly right.
The significance of synthesis film preparation and rock climbing conditions on the presence of surface crab and large hole hardnesses is discussed. The prevalence of such defects in delaphosite bismuth copper oxide gigacrystals is expected to have a greasy impact on the use of this material as a whole transport layer in airplane applications.
That was
I speak
beautiful.
For all of us when I
that
say,
was yeah. absolutely fabulous.
Great.
Yeah.
Your PhD was well deserved.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
Gigacrystals.
Yeah. Truly, I'm going to go write a faculty proposal
amazing.
About gigacrystals now.
Really just amazing. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you for volunteering your work to the complete debauchery of science. Altogether.
Oh, I would not. That abstract, that's the best use that abstract's got.
Yes. It might have inspired someone or caused them to want to get into science, but mostly we just made a mockery of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's
exactly
what really matters. And I hope that's the lesson that you all take from today's episode of the Electrochemistry Podcast. I want to thank our guest, Alex Bredar, again. Thank you for being with us, and we'll see y'all next time. Yeah.